This is a podcast from the Property and Environment Research Center in Bozeman, Montana. PERC is dedicated to improving environmental quality through property rights and markets. Learn more about our work at perc.org. Today, we present a discussion from PERC's Wildfire Solutions Summit on July 22, 2016. Our speaker is Chad Ellis of the Samuel Roberts Noble Foundation. Chad Ellis is a manager of the Center for Land Stewardship and a member of the Noble Foundation's Prescribed Burn Team.
It's great to be here with the PERC family and PERC friends, and we could probably really know pretty quick who was the better, the scholar of the Enviropreneurs and Wendy's of my class that we were in. So, but I'm here to kind of talk about maybe a little shift that we kind of talked about earlier, more on kind of public lands, but kind of looking at the private land and really kind of visit with you guys and kind of look through this kind of smoky lens of the private producer and where they're going. You know, working at the Noble Foundation, we're really producer driven. I mean, that's what we're about. We're 71 years young and moving forward. And, you know, one of our things, and we take a lot of pride in, is looking at solutions and helping those private landowners find those solutions to be successful. And one of them is really the aspect of prescribed fire. You know, why prescribed fire? You know, Dave talked a little bit about these ecological processes, and we think about fire in our landscapes is definitely part of kind of a quote from one of our wildlife consultants at the foundation kind of always uses is fire is as natural as the sun and the rain. And really it is in our landscapes as well as grazing and other aspects. You know, it really kind of comes down to, you know, the kind of the father of wildlife management, Aldo Leopold, and kind of this game management where these multiple tools of the axe, the plow, the cow, the fire, and the gun of managing those landscapes. You know, looking at it on a producer end, it's really about, you know, keeping that rangelands healthy, keeping the productivity and the forage quality. You know, we're at a rancher end of it, we're in it to try to make money. We can't just keep going forward. So we got to manage our lands, and our lands are very important to us because that's how we make our income. It's also the habitat quality and the abundance of all wildlife moving forward. And then this kind of critter here that we have in Oklahoma, that's a huge problem for us, is really the eastern red cedar and the spread of the eastern red cedar. You know, not only on the grazing end of taking some of the grazing acres out, but it's also about, you know, these trees are very, have the oils and highly volatile. And so it becomes kind of a wildfire risk for us. And again, it's the mitigation of the wildfire, kind of what we're here today to talk about. You know, this is a front page of the Oklahoman 2 years ago on a wildfire around Guthrie and the impact of that. And a lot of it has to do with that encroachment of the wild, of the eastern red cedar and the intensity of that. Kind of come in and share a story of a good example here in Oklahoma. This map here is part of the Wichita Mountains Wildlife Refuge, kind of southwest Oklahoma, kind of north of Lawton area. This blue color, the light blue color, is the Ferguson wildfire. It was about 55 square miles, about 40,000 acres. We kind of start seeing these other blocks of the kind of the pink and the light green, the green, the red, and that kind of the purplish color was actually prescribed burns that the refuge had implemented in the last couple of years. And what's interesting is this fire kind of started from the kind of northwest, and it came back down this way, had a shift in weather, and basically then ended up getting a strong southeast shift, and it kind of creeped back around. But where we had these prescribed burns, the crew on the wildlife refuge were able to really mitigate and stop the fire. Kind of want to talk a little bit more about this little small yellow one. This is a producer that we work with very closely at the foundation. You know, part of our efforts at the foundation is consultation efforts of working with private landowners, helping them with their plans, business plans, management plans. And we worked with this gentleman really closely on developing burn plans, helping him implement those burns. And he was able, you know, they were able to really kind of stop it around there and get the crew from his prescribed burning and his efforts on his management of his land. So I think it's really important to think about it that getting fire on the landscape has a lot of value, and a lot of value on this wildlife, wildfires. So how do we get more fire on the ground? And we've looked at a couple of solutions that I'm going to visit with you. The first one is in 2011, we helped with some help with Oklahoma State University of developing the Oklahoma Prescribed Burn Association, kind of a producer-led effort moving forward. And this has helped a lot, and kind of go in a little bit more detail on this. The mission of the OPBA is really about promoting and protecting the rights of the Oklahoma landowners to use prescribed burning as a safe, economical, and effective land management practice by supporting members, prescribed burning associations, and individual landowners. It's really kind of think of an umbrella approach. So we have kind of the Oklahoma Prescribed Burn Association, kind of the state association working, but it's made up of these local prescribed burn associations. Now, this is kind of like a small community, a local effort. This kind of maps outdated a little bit. I think we're about 24 different associations in Oklahoma now, that range from one to three counties. And what's important about this effort on a local basis is it's really about education, training, and equipment. It's about being able to share labor. So these producers kind of, decide to, hey, we'll go to this landowner and we'll help him implement those burns. We share equipment, the costs, the labor, and then the next day they go to the next producer and they kind of work through this. The other thing is the Oklahoma Prescribed Burn Association, as well as like the Noble Foundation, Oklahoma State University, we put a lot of efforts into education. For instance, actually Tuesday of this week, we had a burn training, kind of warm season summer burn training at the Noble Foundation. We had 45 producers there. And in our training is a little different than kind of this classroom aspect. I mean, we do a classroom, but we actually take the classroom out in the field. And we ended up having six different burns that we held that day. So the producers get the hands-on experience of what they need to do and learn really about that fire behavior and knowing how to predict that. So one of the efforts we started with John Weir at Oklahoma State University about 3 years ago is that we had these burn associations across the country. And it really started in kind of the Edwards Plateau part of Texas, and Edwards County actually in about 1997 with Dr. Butch Taylor there at the Sonora Experiment Station. Started working with those landowners, getting them together. So it kind of started in the late 90s with one county. And we kind of look at that kind of green color now. The Edwards Plateau Burn Association is about 20 counties now. And so it kind of became the model that was used to kind of push across the country and kind of tell the story and how effective it is. When we look at it, we kind of started pushing this Alliance of Prescribed Burn Associations. So kind of another bigger umbrella of like the Oklahoma Prescribed Burn Association, more on a regional or national scale. Just recently off, kind of on the left is a paper that John Weir and Drax Treadwell from University of Nebraska wrote about this efforts in the rangelands of Society for Range Management. But when we look at this effort, it's pretty amazing. We have over 50 burn associations across the country. And one of the things that we started doing is, okay, well, that's great, but what are the effects and what's happening with this? So we added on our Oklahoma Prescribed Burn Association webpage is kind of this entry form. So these associations can go in and enter their burns that they've done, the time, and it has multiple questions we can start capturing. We also looked at it in the paper of Weir and Treadwell was that we sent surveys across the 50 different prescribed burn associations and getting information from them. We had about 26 that replied back on the survey to really start looking at asking questions. Well, how many acres have you burned? How many, do you have any escapes? you know, what were some of those things? So we really start showing, we kind of look at some of these numbers of, you know, we had over about 1,100 different burns that were done on the, from the only the 26, again, prescribed burn associations, looking at, you know, over 1.5 million acres that's needing to be burned. In 2012, they burned about 200,000 acres, and they only had really 16 escapes and 220 spot fires. And only one basically lawsuit in the process. And that lawsuit kind of skews some of the numbers in that it was actually in Texas. And what happened was this landowner didn't really follow the rules of when he implemented it. So the Oklahoma, or their burn associations, is really about being safe. So you have to have a burn plan. You have to have the right equipment. You have to have the right people. It's really, you know, a process and not just going out there, and you have to have the conditions correct. And this gentleman basically did everything wrong and didn't follow any of the prescriptions, didn't do anything. He kind of went out there on his own with really no one in kind of a burn ban situation, red flag error, and it kind of got out. Kind of go a little bit more, we can kind of see a little bit of these rate of the fire escapes. You know, we're looking at, you know, 1% of the burns that are really getting out. You know, no really injuries, zero injuries. So we're able to kind of start showing that this is very safe. It's, it is organized effort moving forward. But again, we, you know, how do we get more fire on the ground? And we had producers out there saying, well, this is great. We have this association. We can be part of it. We can learn from one another. We can help one another. But, you know, again, kind of the human nature of it, we're always trying to find other excuses of why we don't want to do things. And a lot of that we kept hearing in some of these surveys and visiting with folks as well, is still a huge liability. We have this issue of this fear, kind of, you know, Sarah was talking about this social piece of it. Especially when you start looking at the our trends and analysis of our producers. We're getting more new producers that don't have the background, that, you know, are just kind of further away from the farm or ranch. And so there wasn't insurance available. So we started, happened to, there in Ardmore, there's a insurance company, Bramlett Insurance Company. And Bob Bramlett was chairman, president of a national insurance association at that time. So we started visiting with him locally, and he's like, you know, I'm traveling around seeing all these people. I think this is a great idea. We need this for so many reasons. So we started working with Bramlett, and we ended up having insurance available now for private landowners, kind of help with this. But really, it's about two things. Again, like I mentioned before, it's about education. And you can't just get insurance to just go out there and start throwing matches and doing things. It's got to be, you know, with the burn plan, there's kind of checks and balances through that process. You know, you have proper training and understanding of burning. And when we think of it in the professional aspect and producers, this is what we think about on prescribed burning. We kind of look at this picture, what do we see? We see, you know, safety gear. We see very safe, organized efforts of equipment and et cetera. But when we started working with these insurance companies, what was their perspective? This is what they saw when we were visiting with these companies. This is mentally, you know, we had this barrier of trying to educate them in that it was a very safe, it is very, you know, organized, it's planned. It's not just a bunch of guys having an excuse to go drink and, you know, start fires. And that's what they really thought. And so it kind of gave us an opportunity to move forward and make this happen. So there is a insurance available in Oklahoma, and you know, $1 million, $2 million policy. It's around $500. That gives you two burns that you can implement on your property. And then it's $250 for each additional burn that you implement. So it starts kind of giving us, again, this tool to the producer to kind of feel a little bit more safe and have some insurance behind them. But again, I always tell producers is that you really need to start off of really looking at your farm and ranch owner's policy first. first. Because a lot of those policies have some prescribed burning language in there that can help. So in progress of the Prescribed Burn Association moving forward, we're really kind of really trying to seek exemption to county commissioner burn bans. So about 2 years ago, the Oklahoma Senate asked to do an interim study on prescribed burn. So we had the opportunity of a two-hour session with the Senate to kind of really educate them and kind of talk through these processes. And what happens is that when they put a commissioner burn ban, a lot of times those are the time periods that we really need to be burning. And so it's trying to educate them kind of on the insurance aspect of it and their mental aspect of really teaching them that it is safe. We can burn in some of these burn bans. And so we've just recently got passed that we can get exemption. And if you're part of the association, have a burn plan, have everything in place, we can get exemption and get fire on the ground to kind of help with these mitigations on wildfires moving forward. We're really starting to increase our collaboration with our rural volunteer fire department. That's where we've kind of run into, again, it's we're all a community, and it's kind of interesting of hearing Dean's perspective. I think is spot on of, these volunteer guys, they want fire, they want to run out there, they want to stop it, they want to, instead of sitting back and educating them and help where they can be part of the process as well. And then really start trying to strengthen the relationships within the state of a memorandum of agreement with the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service, the state agencies, et cetera, where we can all work together, help leverage funds and resources to help these producers moving forward. And so really we're in the formation also to increase more local prescribed burn associations moving on. We also have some other tools in the aspect of the Noble Foundation, and here's one of our sites, our fire sites, of providing that information back to the producers or others in the field where we can help them. So with that, how do we put more fire on the ground to help us move forward? And a lot of it is just collaboration, working, kind of this education outreach to really the public understand that it is safe and that it's kind of building a fire culture throughout the whole community from everyone. And I've had some opportunities in my career of working in multiple places and seeing that fire culture within the whole community and how we have less issues and everybody's aware of it. One of the examples is kind of just south of that Edwards County, Edwards Plateau Burn Association. When I worked in Brackettville, it was actually the conservation district that was sort of, in a sense, acted as an association. And the district had about $150,000 of equipment, and we basically would go out and help producers write burn plans, implement those burns. And I would put 30,000 acres or more on the ground, prescribed burn, helping that community. But the community, when they'd see smoke, it wasn't a scare or a reaction back. It was about, oh, those guys are doing some good work out there. And so it was really neat to see that, and you'd see them in the community, and it's like, oh, I saw you burning on so-and-so's place. And in that aspect of it. Some other things I kind of thought in some of the earlier talks is kind of the Southeast when I worked in Florida for a number of years that I worry and that we need associations there. We've had a number of talks in Florida to implement this prescribed burn association there. And what happens is we kind of think of the Forest Service, and the Forest Service, in Florida, I mean, they're pushing 2 million acres of prescribed burn throughout the state a year. But what happens is on a producer end, we become reliant on, oh, the Forest Service is going to do that burn, we don't have to worry about it. We're still not getting enough fire on the ground, even with their resources. So if we could end up getting areas of that nature, of having burn associations, we can, collectively be able to have a greater on it moving forward. So with that, we'll leave it up for questions. And
that was Chad Ellis of the Samuel Roberts Noble Foundation. You've been listening to the PERC podcast from the Property and Environment Research Center in Bozeman, Montana. PERC is dedicated to improving environmental quality through property rights and markets. Learn more about our work at perc.org.